Welcome to SBC This Week. I'm Laura Erlinson. Brandon Porter is out west, where he's been covering the election of Jeff Orge as the new president and CEO of the SBC Executive Committee. We're going to catch up with Brandon in just a moment, and we'll hear some clips from a press conference that Dr. Orge gave out there in Dallas. We have a lot of stories this week. We have a story from ERLC, from IMB, from Southwestern Seminary, and much more. We'll get to all of that in due course. But the big news this week is out of Dallas. Brandon, how's it going out there?
Hey, Laura. It's definitely been an exciting time here in Dallas as Jeff Orge was elected to become the eighth leader of the SBC Executive Committee.
Brandon, what were some of the topics that Dr. Orge discussed at the press conference?
As you can imagine, he talked about the primary issues facing the EC and the cooperative program, but he also talked about leading the EC.
Organizational trust is earned by two things: sacrificial service and by demonstrated competence. You don't gain trust by asking people to trust you. You gain trust by doing the right thing, serving sacrificially and demonstrating competence, and people trust organizations that do that. So my role at the Executive Committee is to lead us to be a sacrificial servant of Southern Baptist, fulfilling the role we've been assigned, and to do that with competence and credibility so that we become trustworthy in their eyes. So my focus is on improving those processes and making those things happen, not so much just trying to get people to trust us, but trying to do trustworthy things that people will then decide to make the trust the Executive Committee processes.
Dr. Orge talked about the issues the EC is facing right now.
Well, the things that are before the Executive Committee now are sexual abuse response, prevention and response, issues that are raised about motions that were referred to the SBC from the SBC related to what's often called the Form 990 or things related. The issues related to amendments to the Constitution about women pastors. These are pressing issues right now that are either before the Executive Committee or may require some leadership from the Executive Committee to resolve at this convention. And then there are other issues that are also well known, legal issues that the Executive Committee is facing, financial challenges. Those things may relate also to the sale or not, the potential sale of the facility in Nashville. So those are other issues, but maybe not as pressing as the first three I mentioned for this particular upcoming convention.
Laura, Dr. Orge talked about the importance of the cooperative program and his approach in the EC's ministry assignments related to it.
I'm grateful to Southern Baptist for what they've invested in my life over the last 50 years. I came to faith in Jesus Christ because of the witness of a Southern Baptist church. I was mentored and trained in a Southern Baptist church, attended multiple Southern Baptist colleges and seminaries, and was supported by the mission boards and the state convention where I worked in the Northwest, and now 20 years at Gateway Seminary. And my wife has a similar story of coming to faith in Christ in a Southern Baptist church, being called to ministry leadership at a Girls in Action camp, and experiencing growing up in a Christian family where both her parents were graduates of a Baptist college. And so we are the product of Southern Baptists, and we're grateful now at this juncture point in life to serve Southern Baptists, really in gratitude for what they've invested in us over the last 50 years. My experience in ministry all these years has been people resource what they believe in and what they have a vision to accomplish, what they share the vision for accomplishing through that means. My real challenge is lifting up the mission of God and calling Southern Baptist to that and the cooperative program as a means to fulfilling that. I don't see myself as trying to convince people to give more money. I think people need, my role is to try to convince people the vision is worthy of more resources and to keep that focus and that distinction in how I approach it. I have benefited so much from the cooperative program. I'm the president of one of the largest seminaries in North America today. There's no possible way that seminary would have been grown in the Western United States had we depended only on Western Southern Baptist. It just couldn't have happened. But by God's grace and the shared giving and the support of a national denominational movement, we have a tremendous seminary on the West Coast that is far stronger than Western Baptists could have produced in the last 50 years. So I'm grateful for the cooperative program on many levels. I'm an advocate for it, but I really believe the challenge is raising up the vision for what it can accomplish and then asking people to fund that vision in more generous ways.
So, Laura, as you can imagine, we're just getting started into Dr. Orge's leadership of the EC, but I can tell you there is optimism and a hope that we haven't seen from an EC meeting in quite some time.
Well, I would certainly agree with that. We're recording this on Friday, March 22nd, and this very morning, the staff got to meet Dr. Orge and his wife, Anne, for the first time and hear from them and hear his heart. And it was just a very sweet time. And there is a real sense of joy and optimism in this building and just a looking forward to the future and of his leadership and what we're going to accomplish together. And that was just a lot of fun this morning. I've loved hearing from him. And I've also loved hearing from members of the search team as they have let the staff know a little bit more about the journey that they went through. And one of the emails that we got from the search team was one of the search team members by the name of Sarah Rogers. And I reached out to Sarah and asked her if she would take that and turn it into a first person for Baptist Press. And so she did. And we ran it on Thursday, the day of the election. And she was so kind to do that. And she actually had the whole committee input into it. And I would just encourage you to read it. It's just about how the Lord established their steps and how sometimes the Lord's plan isn't clear, but you just have to trust him and ultimately he will lead you in the right direction. And she said she was glad that the Lord didn't give them blueprints for exactly how it was going to go because it caused their faith to grow. It invited them to recognize his authority and power, and it invited them to recognize his glory. And I thought that was just something, a good advice that could be applicable to a lot of different scenarios in life. And so a fun week, an exciting week, an encouraging week here at the SBC building in Nashville. Some other big news from the SBC this week, the annual meeting schedule was released. This is always a big day, and that happened earlier this week. And it's a little different this year. And so I think maybe they decided to release it a little bit early just to give people time to plan on the fact that there is a Tuesday night session this week. For the first time since 2018, we will have a Tuesday night session at the annual meeting in Indianapolis. It begins, of course, June 11th at 8 a.m. and then an 8:15 call to order. And it goes all the way through that whole day and evening, and then it concludes June the 12th on Wednesday at 4:45 p.m. And Hayden Ratner, who is the Committee on Order of Business Chairman this year, he said, "We didn't want just any agenda for our time together. We wanted an agenda that seeks the kingdom first and greater unity." And he says, "I hope messengers and guests come optimistically eager to celebrate God's activity through our convention, while at the same time remembering we are better together." Now, Tuesday is a big day, June 11th. It starts right out of the gate with introduction of new motions at 9 o'clock, and then again at 1:55 that afternoon. And then at 3:15, we hear from the Abuse Reform Implementation Task Force. And then in the evening session, we hear from the Great Commission Resurgence Task Force at 6:50, and then the Cooperation Group at 7:45. So Tuesday, be ready to be in your seat all day. Some other news that we learned out of the SBC this week is that former Southwestern Seminary President Adam Greenway has filed suit against the seminary as well as its trustee chairman, claiming defamation. And he said that defamation has rendered him, quote, unemployable. He takes issue with the way some expenditures were characterized in the wake of his departure there at Southwestern. You might remember that last fall, he sent a letter threatening a $5 million lawsuit that the seminary at the time said was baseless and absurd. Those were quotes from that statement. The current suit calls for damages in excess of $75,000. For its part, Southwestern issued a statement saying it is regrettable that Adam Greenway is suing the seminary he has previously claimed to love. And then it goes on to say later, "We categorically deny the allegations contained in the lawsuit, will defend vigorously the institution, and are confident the outcome will demonstrate that these claims are entirely baseless." And so there's a full Baptist Press story about that. Would encourage you to go look into that as well, and we'll be following that as it goes. Well, Jeff Orge wasn't the only president elected on Thursday. Also, University of Mobile, the trustee board there elected a new president, Charles W. Smith, Jr. You might be familiar with that name. He has been on staff at Midwestern Seminary for the past 11 years, most recently as senior vice president for institutional relations, as well as assistant professor of Christian leadership. He's perhaps best known for co-founding the For the Church conference and the resource platform, and he helped establish the For the Church Institute, which is a suite of free online classes serving thousands of students around the world. And that has sort of become the catchphrase there at Midwestern Seminary, For the Church. And Charles Smith was influential in that movement. And the president of Midwestern, Jason Allen, said he could not be happier for Charles Smith or the University of Mobile or my hometown of Mobile, Alabama. He said, a promising institution is receiving a proven leader, and I anticipate both will flourish in the years to come. So encouraging words there from his former boss as he goes on to the University of Mobile. We wish him well there. Some great news out of South Carolina this week as well. The Connie Maxwell Children's Ministries, which is affiliated with the South Carolina Baptist Convention, announced a $2.6 million gift and the naming of a 25,000 square foot facility that will provide services to children and families. It'll be called the McCall Center, named for the late P.L. Roy McCall, whose generosity helped make it a reality. It will include an auditorium for large-scale events, meeting rooms, and a research library, as well as a board meeting room, workstations and offices, and accommodations for children receiving therapy and interventions. So really amazing development there in South Carolina, their children's ministry there. An ERLC story in Baptist Press this week talked about the public comments that the ERLC signed onto regarding some State Department rules that have been proposed. The rules are ostensibly to establish new non-discrimination requirements for both the recipients and the contractors for federal foreign assistance grants. However, the statement says, unfortunately, the proposed changes would subordinate faith-based organizations and risk the loss of these organizations from partnering with the State Department in the delivery of foreign assistance, thereby undermining the foreign policy objectives of the U.S. government. Palmer Williams, who is the general counsel for the ERLC, highlighted the important work that religious organizations do around the world, serving millions of people using these federal grants. And she said, it is imperative that these groups are provided protection from discrimination based upon their deeply held religious beliefs. And so they have joined with organizations like Samaritan's Purse, the Accord Network, the Institutional Religious Freedom Alliance, and the Christian Legal Society are just some of the signatories on this public statement urging the rejection of these new regulations. An interesting story out of Lifeway Research this week. Last year, you may remember, they did an in-depth look at Hispanic churches. And then this year, it's kind of a follow-up to that. It's an in-depth look at Hispanic Protestant pastors. And a lot of great statistics in that story and in this report from Lifeway Research. Just a few that I will highlight. Pastors were asked about challenges in their family life and their emotional and physical well-being. A majority identified four specific issues they said need attention. And those were apathy or a lack of commitment from their people. That was 72%. Balancing time between work and home. That was 58%. Consistently exercising. 57%. And taking time to relax and have fun away from work. And that was 50%. Half of all pastors said that. They said that they are most likely to turn to their spouse for the support that they need when they're struggling. A lot of great, interesting statistics in that article. I would encourage you to check it out. And then speaking of Hispanic Baptist pastors, a group of the National Hispanic Baptist Network met at the International Mission Board earlier this month. And that group's executive director, Bruno Molina, said that the group is committed to realizing their vision that all peoples of the earth would know of God's redeeming love in Christ. And this meeting was a way to inspire work among the nations by Hispanic Baptists. He said, quote, we are fully committed to collaborating with the IMB to identify and recruit Hispanics to serve in the international mission field. So interesting story out of Richmond there this week. Haitian Baptist leaders also made their way to Baptist Press this week. Diana Chandler in Baptist Press had a story about the Haitian Baptist Fellowship partnering with the Florida Baptist Convention to establish a refugee center in Mexico. Many of the refugees pouring into Mexico right now are from Haiti. And Miami pastor Kenny Felix said he and other Haitian Baptist leaders are familiar with the churches that many of these refugees are coming from in Haiti. And he said the plan is to build a hospitality center to provide respite for refugees, and then also to plant churches there to allow a place for them to worship. Well, those are the stories from Baptist Press this week, just a few of them. Of course, we always have way more stories than we have time to talk about on this podcast. But the history moment this week, I just thought this was super interesting. So when I started at Baptist Press a long time ago now, I was given a Ziploc bag, like a gallon-sized Ziploc bag, and a list of instructions for what to do if I ever received an envelope with white powder in it. And I thought, well, that is really strange. What I didn't know at the time was just a few years prior, there had been an anthrax scare here at the building, at the SBC building in Nashville. And so what we were supposed to do if we ever received such a letter is immediately close our door, put the letter in the bag, seal it up, and call the facilities maintenance people and tell them what we had found so that they could turn off the HVAC system and the air wouldn't circulate in the building and all of these instructions we were given. Well, of course, I've never had to use any of those instructions, but I remember vividly being told that. And so when I was going back through the history moment, I just happened to find that it was this week, in fact, to the day, March 22nd, 1999, so 25 years ago to the day of when I'm recording this podcast, the headline in Baptist Press, FBI reports no anthrax bacteria found in letter at SBC building. So the letter was opened on March 5th, and so that was a little earlier in the month. But March 22nd, the Baptist Press headline was that they had investigated or they had looked into what was actually contained in this white powder, and it was not anthrax. Not really sure what it was, but that's the story from 25 years ago this week. Morris Chapman, who was then executive committee president, said that the SBC EC staff emerged from the experience with a deeper awareness that each day we live is a gift from God. I am grateful to the Lord for the unshakable faith of our staff, he said, and we are all thankful for the many prayers of those who expressed concern over the last 2 weeks. And so I hope that doesn't scare Dr. Orge, who has not even moved anything into his office yet, into this building. But we haven't had any such scare. Actually, I think they did have another scare maybe in March of 2003, in fact. But that didn't turn out to be anthrax either. So we've never had any anthrax in the building, so I think we're okay. But maybe we should all keep a gallon Ziploc bag at our desk just in case. Well, as always, we miss Brandon being with us, but he's doing an important thing out there out west. And as always, there was way more stories than we had time to get to on this podcast. You can check all of these out, plus many, many more at baptistpress.com. Thanks for listening.